Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio voters in 2004 approved a constitutional ban on gay marriage, and now a movement is underway to overturn that ban. Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine has approved the language for the 2013 statewide ballot, and a who's who list of prominent Democrats from across the state have endorsed it. The ballot board has approved it, and now Freedom to Marry Ohio has been cleared to begin gathering the necessary 385,253 valid signatures of registered Ohio voters to qualify for the ballot. But one of the state's largest gay rights advocacy organizations, Equality Ohio, says that they're concerned about potential holes in the language now. Freedom to Marry Ohio boasts a growing roster of supporters, but has it lost the biggest one of all in its own ranks among gay rights groups? Joining us now to talk about that is Equality Ohio Executive Director Ed Mullen. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you.
Also with us is Freedom to Marry Ohio CEO Mary Jo Kilroy. Mary Jo, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, and thanks for including us.
Question for our listeners. We want to hear from supporters of gay marriage. Do you think the Freedom to Marry Ohio group should go ahead with its effort to get the constitutional amendment on the ballot in 2013 to overturn the state's same-sex marriage ban? Or do you have concerns about the language in the amendment? Give us a call. We're looking for gay marriage supporters now. We're not debating the issue of gay marriage.
Can I make a qualification?
Absolutely.
We think that the issue is more properly framed as the freedom to marry. Rather than saying gay marriage, we are talking about marriage.
I understand, but for the sake of simplification, we all know what we're talking about,
right.
But I certainly respect the distinction.
It's about marriage equality and the freedom of all Ohioans to marry the person that they have fallen in love with and have chosen to spend their life with.
Ed Mullen, when Freedom to Marry Ohio folks delivered their petitions to the Attorney General's office, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't you there smiling with them? In fact, Equality Ohio was formed in the wake of the ban being passed in the first place. So did something change between then and now?
Right. Absolutely. We were formed in 2005 after the constitutional amendment was passed and are very supportive of marriage equality and believe that the work that we do every day lays the foundation to ultimately get there. And I think that despite our disagreements today, ultimately, we will work with Freedom to Marry and all the other groups around the state to achieve marriage equality because we think it's the right thing. So to answer your specific question, one of the things that we did after the point where the petitions were filed was do a lot of research that reached out to people in Maine and Oregon, reached out to national groups that have done this in, you know, at least a dozen other states, the Human Rights Campaign, to Freedom to Marry, to the ACLU. We reached out to local groups around the state, the GLSEN chapters, the PFLAG chapters, the local equality groups. And what we overwhelmingly heard from those folks is that there were a whole range of issues that they had with going forward. And so as a group that tries to represent the opinions of our community around the state, we saw that the community was asking for three things to be done very generally. The first is that they wanted much more open, transparent decision-making and a much more collaborative, community-based plan for moving forward. The second thing that we heard from folks is that they wanted to understand where we were and how we needed to get to a place where we could be victorious. When we were here last, we had a pollster on who presented some polls that showed that support for marriage equality in Ohio was at 38% in October of last year. And while that may have gone up and while the specific language of the ballot may show a higher percentage of support, the fact is that without understanding where we are and where we need to go, going forward with a petition at this point is not a good idea.
The folks behind the ballot issue are, most of them, very seasoned political operatives or politicians. Why do you think they don't understand where the state is and how it should move forward?
Right. Well, I don't think that a lot of the folks that are listed as politicians who are supporters are specifically people
True,
that are supporting.
But there are people behind it who are very sophisticated, experienced political types.
Right, and there are a lot of people against it who are very sophisticated.
I know, but I'm just saying, but why do you think they don't understand where the state is?
I think they are going to go do some polling and find out where the state is, and I think that, you know, that's going to change the conversation, and that's going to give us all a baseline for where we need to start. But the folks that have done this around the country show that there's a very specific pathway that has worked in other states to change people's minds. And we think it's important to learn those lessons from other states. And we don't think that the way this is going forward has taken those lessons into account. We think there needs to be, like there is in Maine, like there is in Minnesota, like there is in Oregon, a coalition structure for decision making and going forward where the groups all have input in the language, input on when it goes to the ballot, input on how it is done. And that's not how it's being done right now.
Is this a territorial issue?
I don't think so, because we don't want to run this campaign. We have a strategic plan that focuses on non-discrimination and safe schools and changing hearts and minds of people in the state of Ohio. We think, just like in every other state, you set up a separate campaign structure to do this. And so, you know, we would want a seat at the table in that campaign structure, but we do not think that that should be run through Equality Ohio. That's not how it's been optimally run in other states.
Mary Jo, you know, I mentioned at the outset that Ed Mullen was there at the outset. What do you think has changed, in your opinion, since then?
Well, I'm not sure. I say we were pretty surprised to read in the paper of Equality Ohio's decision to not support the effort. We met with a variety of organizations and groups, including the national groups and leadership. We've met with local groups, and we are gaining in support every day, doing the kind of political work that's necessary to get the issue passed, to make sure that come 2013 that we can be victorious. In fact, you know, Ed was part of some of the meetings with those national groups, so it was pretty surprising to see that happen. We are very interested in learning from the mistakes that were made in other places, learning what worked in other places. We want to take that knowledge and put it to work there. And that's why we engage in the outreach to the national organizations. But for thousands of Ohioans, marriage matters to them. Every day that goes by that they are not allowed to make that public commitment in front of their families and friends to get that marriage license, to vow to love, honor, and cherish for the rest of their lives, is another day that those rights are denied to people. And we believe that the time has come now to begin that conversation with the voters, to engage in that dialogue and that petition process. Having over 1,000 volunteers carrying that petition, talking to their neighbors, their coworkers, their family, is part of the outreach, is part of building that groundswell of support that will ultimately be successful at the ballot. Most political operatives who have been worked in the field will tell you that that one-on-one kind of conversation is the most powerful kind of messaging. It's not the only kind of voter education that we'll be engaged in.
But, Mary Jo, the national group also believes that you're rushing things, that you haven't laid the necessary groundwork. They've gone on record. Even though they don't particularly have a problem with the language per se, they think you might be rushing things. What do you get out of that message that it's getting rushed now and that there needs to be some other more foundation laid before you get started on this kind of statewide campaign to overturn a constitutional amendment?
Well, and we have spoken with the Freedom to Marry organization and two other of their national leaders, including their founder and director, including their national field director. And I have received a call with a personal apology for the statements that one of their members made in that newspaper. I want to continue to have a dialogue, and I've heard from them that they want to continue to have a dialogue with us. So that was really unfortunate that that happened that way. But, you know, we believe that it is time to allow marriage for all adult Ohioans, regardless of gender, and also to recognize that religious institutions have a right to refrain to perform a marriage, to refuse to recognize a marriage, or to affirm and include that marriage. That's their religious freedom. And we think that understanding that both freedoms are important to Ohioans will make it possible for loving couples who are married to be able to have that security, to be able to have the benefit of the many laws that affect them as married couples that would be available to you or me, but are not available to same-sex couples. That is a wrong that we can address, and we're beginning that campaign. We are focusing the voters. We are making change happen.
We're talking about the proposed constitutional amendment. It'll be on the ballot in 2013. If they gather enough signatures, we're looking for callers, you know, listeners, emailers, however you want to communicate with us, who already support the freedom to marry in Ohio, but may or may not agree with the decision to put it on the ballot in 2013. So give us a call. We're not debating the issue of the freedom to marry. Ed Mullen of Equality Ohio, I've heard some people complain that you urged some public officials to back the proposed constitutional amendment and then backed out yourself.
That's absolutely false. We worked with Freedom to Marry Ohio before the constitutional amendment was even conceived on a joint language.
So where was the breakdown then? If you were working with them, where is that point of
the point
separation?
Was where we went out and reached out to people around the state and reached out to folks nationally and found out that they had issues. And when we raised those issues with Freedom to Marry, we were rebuffed in terms of both the language, in terms of what we thought the structure needed to be. And the message that we got from folks around the state is, let's convene a committee that would create a structure where the decision making, the planning, the deciding of what the language is going to be, when it's going to be on the ballot, is going to be much more public and much more collaborative. And I keep hearing a lot about a dialogue, but what I've seen is less of a dialogue and more of a idea that this is what we're doing, you know, get on the bus or don't get on the bus. And I think with a community like ours that is so diverse geographically, so diverse in terms of religion, so diverse in terms of race and in terms of wealth, that you have to realize that people see things through a whole separate set of prisms. And you need to bring people together before you decide what a language is going to say, when you're going to do things. And I don't think that was done. But the other thing that happened is I took the language and I sent it to a couple constitutional law professors that I know. And I said, one, are there problems with this? And two, is this the best we can do? And almost the universal response that I got from folks was, you can do a lot better. And I just wish that Freedom to Marry would put the pause button on and say, okay, ACLU, okay, Lambda Legal, okay, HRC Legislative Council, okay, OSU law professors, have a go at the language. Tell us what the best we can do is, because our community deserves that.
We will return to our conversation about whether or not a proposed constitutional amendment to overturn the state's same-sex marriage ban will be on the ballot in 2013, or whether a group formed to put it on the ballot will continue its effort. With us is Mary Jo Kilroy, CEO of Freedom to Marry Ohio, and also Ed Mullen, Executive Director of Equality Ohio. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, 52 degrees with some sunshine, partly sunny skies today and a high of 64. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 43 degrees, sunshine for Wednesday, and a high of 69.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Time is running out for you to win the new iPad and support 89.7 NPR News. Our spring membership drive begins Thursday. And by becoming a sustaining member early, you'll be automatically entered to win the new iPad. Visit WOSU.org now, make your sustaining gift, and get registered. No pledge is necessary, but your support will continue to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News. And All Sides continues. Thanks for joining us today.
Ohio voters in 2004 approved a constitutional ban on gay marriage. Now a movement is underway to overturn that ban. Language has been approved by the Ohio Attorney General and also the ballot board to put the language on the 2013 statewide ballot. The organization Freedom to Marry Ohio has been cleared to begin gathering the necessary 385,253 valid signatures they need to qualify it for the ballot. But Equality Ohio, one of the state's largest gay rights advocacy organizations, has said they're concerned about potential holes in the language. They think that Freedom to Marry Ohio is rushing it. If you agree or disagree with that, but support the Freedom to Marry, support gay marriage in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, and tell us why you agree or disagree that it's the right time to put it on the ballot. Email from David to Mary Jo, thank you for taking on this critical mission of Freedom to Marry. I have read the amendment and wonder why Equality Ohio is being an obstructionist organization. Have you had lawyers look at the amendment? If so, what do those legal professionals say about this amendment? So, I want to get to that question, too. What are the holes in the language, specifically, Ed Mullen, that the legal experts you've consulted with have pointed out as concerns?
Okay. The first and most troubling of them is that the second piece of the amendment that deals with the freedom to marry says that a religious institution does not have to recognize any marriage. And that applies not just to performing a marriage or using it for religious type purposes, but it applies to the University of Dayton as a school hiring a professor and deciding whether to give that professor civilly
married
person.
Because it's a religious school.
Right. Or Mount Carmel, mm-hmm. when you show up at an emergency room, are they going to respect your civil marriage? But the problem with that is not just that it affects the same-sex couples, but that it also affects heterosexual couples because of the way the language is drafted.
Well, why?
Because it says a marriage is a union between any two people, and a religious institution does not have to perform or recognize any marriage. So that applies not only to same-sex marriages, but it applies to heterosexual marriages as well.
So how has it been written differently? How has that aspect been written differently? Because it's common, people generally agree, and we know it's not the niggling, bits and pieces of the law, but generally agree. What they mean by is you can't force a church, a religious institution, to perform a gay marriage or to perform any kind of marriage that they don't want to.
Churches right. have rights under their constitution.
Already. They do, but he's saying it goes beyond just a church. It could be any kind of religious organization.
A church or religious organization has rights now to make their own determinations as to their own religion. We can't tell a religion what to do. There is freedom of religion in this country. Now, if a church wanted to say to me, we're not going to recognize your marriage as a Christian to somebody who is a divorced Jew because we don't believe in divorce or we don't believe in mixed marriage, that is the right of that church to do that. Churches have that authority now. What we want to do is to make sure that the religious beliefs of certain people don't become an obstacle to getting the right to marry passed, to be able to say politically, no, this is not going to affect your church. You are not going to be forced to perform marriages.
But what about recognizing...
If you are an affirming church, that's wonderful.
All right. Well, what about recognizing a same-sex marriage if you want to go work for, not to pick on, let's just say University of Dayton, for organization that's under the auspices of a religious organization, a larger religious organization, what if they say, no, we're not going to give you cover insurance coverage because we don't recognize your marriage.
Well, I think that's the situation, that they could do that now if they chose to do that. But I don't believe they do choose to do that because talent is in demand. And many businesses and other organizations, and I think organizations like universities and others will go right along with this, they know that marriage equality is an important economic indicator for our state, and that our state needs to move forward into the area of marriage equality to be able to attract and retain talent. I talked to a couple recently, and they moved here for they got married in another state. They moved here for one of the husband's decisions in terms of his further higher education. They want to leave because they want to be in a place where the law treats them not as good friends, but as spouses, as a married couple.
But I don't think anyone disagrees with that. I think everybody, you and Ed both agree.
That same kind of pressure will make it change. Will make change happen with the University of Dayton or others. If marriage is allowed in Ohio between persons, regardless of their gender, and that more and more people take advantage of that, more people know couples who are of the same sex.
Everything else will follow, you're
saying. That begins to make more change happen. But you're not going to make the change happen if you're not in there fighting, if you're not engaging, if you're not having this kind of a campaign and these kind of a discussions. You know, Ed complained that this was a diverse state and implied that somehow or other that our diverse state wasn't ready for it yet in his comments before the break. We are reaching out to diverse organizations across the state. We have had support from urban areas and rural areas. We have had people like George Forbes, the head of the Cleveland NAACP, endorse this effort. We have gotten an editorial support from the Marietta Times.
Are you concerned about any of that support now that Equality Ohio is pulling away or has not come into the fold?
I think as more people see more support, more people will continue to come on. And that's what we're doing.
Okay.
We're engaging in outreach outside of the LGBT
because that's
community.
A campaign you're running, and that's completely understandable. Ed Mullen, what kind of language did they have in these other states that you feel or they feel guaranteed that sort of security that you're talking about in regards to ancillary religious organizations and the impact they can have or the way they may respond to same-sex marriage?
Right. Let me say three things as quickly as I can. The first is that if you look at the debate over contraceptives right now and religious institutions offering insurance coverage for contraceptives, I think the idea that it's just going to happen practically is wrong, and we're writing a huge exception into the Ohio State Constitution. The second thing is they're obscuring the issue that this relates to heterosexual couples, which one may make it unconstitutional, but two is going to lead to ads from the other side with a second married couple going to Catholic Charities and trying to adopt a child, and Catholic Charities saying, we don't recognize your marriage because you've been divorced. And the third thing is the way that it's been dealt with in other states is that there's a whole line of legal cases dividing religious institutions doing things in religious activities versus secular activities. And that is the type of language that's been put in to other state laws to make sure that religious institutions have the freedoms that they're guaranteed under the Constitution while we have the same freedom to marry.
Couldn't some of that stuff be taken care of in rulemaking, though?
In rulemaking under a constitutional amendment?
Right, as it's implemented.
I don't think that you can overturn the scope of a constitutional amendment by a rule. I've never seen that done.
Okay. Terry in the Short North, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I am a proud supporter of marriage equality for all. It's unfortunate that I don't think we're ready here in Ohio to take on this battle. There is no state around the country that has been successful getting marriage equality at the ballot, and I just don't see the effort being successful here in Ohio. Now, there was a successful election in Cincinnati where they repealed their discriminatory statute. However, that took 3 years for them to build the coalition before they even put it on the ballot. And so I don't think in Ohio, being a purple state, that we're quite ready. We need much more coalition building and education and some wins under our belts in other states before we're going to be successful here.
All right, Terry, thank you.
I think
Mary
Jo? I hope we do have wins in other states that help be a further springboard for success in Ohio. And I'm really hopeful that there could be a win in Maryland, for example, in 2012, or one of the other states that are on the battlefield in 2012. But I think Ohio, you know, we're talking about 2013. We are talking about doing the outreach to voters around the state, not just with the LGBT organizations, but getting outside of the LGBT organizations to build a winning electoral amendment on the ballot in November 2013. And getting out there and focusing the voters with the tool, this wonderful tool of the petition, where you have volunteers who are going and talking to people about it. We will also be doing polling and engaging in the kind of informed conversations to help us win. We will continue to do outreach to news organizations like the Marietta Times, and hopefully we'll get more editorials that saying that not allowing gay couples to marry is a violation of civil rights, period. That's what the Marietta Times said, and more people believe that the time is now. Social change isn't a linear process. You know, you don't do one thing in a straight line, one after another. Now, I appreciate it that Equality Ohio is working on other issues. They're working on ENDA. They're working on bullying. We fully support that. And we think that the efforts around marriage equality will enhance that work and get more people seeing what it means to have some of our friends and neighbors be denied their basic human rights. And we want to make this kind of change happen. But right now, we think that a spark has been lit. You know, it has caught fire. And sometimes things happen. Social change sometimes moves in a quantum leap. We think that quantum leap is here now, and we're doing that because we are seeing more support from various individuals in the LGBT community and also with straight allies from the LGBT community. We are getting support from both Democrats and Republicans.
An email from Louise, she says to Mary Jo Kilroy, I'm concerned that without the passage of non-discrimination that is inclusive of sexual orientation and gender identity prior to an effort to pass marriage equality in Ohio would allow legislators to restrict certain rights and responsibilities to opposite-sex spouses, thereby leaving some gender couples in the same place they are now. Have the Freedom to Marry Ohio people considered this? If so, why didn't they take the time to create language that would withstand such an action? So, she says she's concerned that without the passage of non-discrimination that is inclusive of sexual orientation and gender identity.
Well, first, let me be really clear that our language, the language of the petition, was circulated to a number of lawyers, and we got input from those lawyers. So, you know, I think it's being unfairly characterized as not having been vetted by good legal minds who understand and are engaged in civil rights and employment rights. I don't think that necessarily you need to pass ENDA, ending discrimination in housing or on the job first. I think things can move in tandem. The previous caller, Terry, pointed out that no state has been successful on the ballot yet. Some of those states, I don't know where they are in terms of ENDA. But, you know, we think that both can move forward. And if Equality Ohio wants to work on ENDA and bullying as we move forward, that's great. Ed told us in our meeting that he thought ENDA would pass this year. That would be fantastic. And then that also would alleviate that caller's concerns that we have to do ENDA first.
Ed Mullen, if the language changed, and which it can't at this point because they'd have to go back through the ballot board and get the approval. Well, it could, but it would be very difficult. But if it could be, would 2013 still be too soon, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think my opinion on this really matters.
Well, I'm asking about in the...
I think what we need to do is have a poll and understand where we are on this piece of the language, because not knowing where we stand and making a decision on when it should go on the ballot, I think is irresponsible. I think what we need to know is how many people do we need to convince between now and Election Day, and how are we going to do that? How are we going to fund that?
Mary Jo, how did you decide that 2013 was the right year? How did you come to the conclusion that this was the right time and this was the right language?
Well, much of the conversation with Ed Mullen and others has been around the fact that they didn't want it to go forward in 2012. And we were very clear right from the start that 2012 was not our goal, that we thought that the earliest that it could go on would be 2013. We think that is a reasonable time period which to gain the support of the people of
Ohio.
But
how do you know that? How do you know? What kind of research and have you done? Have you done polling? That's what I'm getting at.
All right. You know, there have been a lot. There's been a lot of change in the polls around the country. There have been quantum leap changes in the polling around the country, big seismic shifts in the support for marriage equality. In the New York Times today, there were four or five columns basically saying marriage equality was a non-issue, that the population has changed their opinion, that people don't care what other people do. They want to allow people to have those kind of rights. You know, these are people that maybe not would oppose some other parts of ENDA, but for marriage equality, they say it doesn't bother me. Those people should be allowed to do that. It's certainly not the way I would frame the issue, or that I would look in terms of marriage equality or on ENDA, but marriage equality is an issue whose time has come. Now, we're going to be engaging in the fundraising. We're going to be engaging in the polling. Ed knows that.
Well, let me ask, Ed, are you going to be actively opposing it? Sorry, Mary Jo, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we're running out of time.
No, I don't think we're going to be actively opposing it.
They're going forward. How do you not get on board with something like this?
Well, I think that, you know, ultimately we're all going to come together and we're going to agree on a process, we're going to agree on a structure, and we're going to agree on a language. And that's how I started our conversation today. And I think when you talk to people around the state and you talk to national groups, you know, that ultimately happens. And there's some awkwardness, there's some uncomfortableness, and there's some dissension before you get there. But I think we will. And I think that in my role, I need to look at the people who are vehemently opposed to this, and I need to look at the people who are vehemently supportive.
Is everybody in your organization of one mind about this?
Our board voted unanimously to create this structure to move forward to try and bring people together and do a review of the language.
And implicitly then not being on board with Freedom to Marry Ohio.
Right. And I think there's a lot of people around the state that we've reached out to. We did a survey to over 160 people who are leaders of local organizations. And out of those folks, only two people told us that they wanted us to go ahead and fully support this.
I have an email from Jesse, writes to Ed Mullen. Equality Ohio was founded in part as a bold reaction to the 2004 constitutional amendment that banned marriage equality in Ohio. The organization has since enjoyed limited legislative success and recently taken the peculiar, seemingly contradictory position that Ohio is not ready for marriage equality. If now is not the right time, please explain when Ohio's LGBT families might expect a return on their investment in Equality Ohio. So if not now, when? And you're saying, well, that's what you want to do a poll about.
Right. But I think what folks also need to realize is that it is a building, cumulative, complementary process that leads to civil rights and leads to change. And so when we get Cleveland Heights to pass a human rights ordinance, when we get Cuyahoga County to pass domestic partner benefits, when we get Athens to pass a hate crimes law, all that work that we're doing on the local level with local groups in collaboration is ultimately what changes the hearts and minds of people and enables us to get things like this passed. So the answer to when is, frankly, I don't know. And I agree with Mary Jo on a lot of the points that the polling has leapt dramatically. But when you look at the polling in states like Maryland, which is much higher than Ohio has been historically, there are a lot of people that are very concerned about Maryland passing this year, which is a blue state, which has done years and years of groundwork. And I think that if we're going to do this, it needs to be done collaboratively, and it needs to be done strategically, knowing exactly how many people we need to reach out to and convince. And if you look at what Maine has done, it took them a whole year with 35 full-time paid staffers to move the needle one percentage point in support of marriage equality. And I think that if we are going to do this, we've got to understand what an epic effort it's going to be and do the groundwork and coalition building before we move forward with an actual petition. If all that is done, the petition and the election follow easily. You've got to lay more groundwork before you go forward with this.
Mary Jo, you have about 25 seconds.
Freedom Ohio has been working with organizations, and we tried to work with Ed Mullen and Equality Ohio. He says there's awkwardness and dissension. It's unfortunate that he chose to make public his opposition to this effort, but we are bringing people together. And as we engage people around the issue, if you're not engaging people around the issue of marriage equality, they're not going to be focused on it. We're not going to be changing their hearts and minds. We have to be out there talking to the voters, building the coalition, doing the political work, not just within the LGBT community, but outside of it as well, so it could build a winning coalition so Ohio couples do not have to face discrimination anymore.
Mary Jo Kilroy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mary Jo Kilroy, she's CEO of the Freedom to Marry Ohio, and also Ed Mullen, Executive Director of Equality Ohio. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
When we return, we're going to turn our sights to recycling, curbside recycling in Columbus. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and it's Tech Tuesday. A discussion of Facebook buying Instagram, ebooks, and the antitrust lawsuit, and gadgetry. That's on Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
When immigrants came to America, they brought with them not only their grandmother's recipes, but century-old traditions. Celebrity chef Lydia Bastianich takes a culinary journey across rural and urban America to experience the diverse melting pot of our country. And tonight, the show focuses on wedding traditions as cultures mix across the United States. Watch Lydia Celebrates America, Weddings, Something Borrowed, Something New. It's tonight at 8 on WOSU TV. 53 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 64. Clouds tonight, a low of 43. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are switching gears now. The city's Get Green Columbus initiative takes a big step in June when so-called curbside recycling starts. The new recycling program required a $15 million renovation of Rumpke's Columbus Material Recovery Facility. Joining us now to talk about the technical changes needed to handle the increased volumes of recyclables is Jonathan Kissel of Rumpke Recycling. Jonathan manages Rumpke's education program, including tours of its Columbus recycling facility. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me on.
Also joining us by phone from Richfield, Ohio, is Deanne Toto, the managing editor of Recycling Today Media Group, a news and information resource for recycling professionals. Welcome, Deanne.
Hi, Anne.
So we're talking about a $15 million renovation of Rumpke's Columbus Material Recovery Facility. There is a shorter way to refer to that, correct?
We just call it the recycling facility.
Okay, good. And was this necessary to achieve the efficiencies for the city's residential recycling program?
It provides the necessary infrastructure to handle the volume that we anticipate when the program is fully implemented in 2013. When we bring online 227,000 households of residential recycling, it's going to add quite a bit of volume to the recycling facility, or at least we hope so. And so we began a strategic process as a company in 2009 to upgrade our existing facility. We've been on the site since the early 1990s. It's undergone several renovations, but in 2009, we began an overwhelming process to completely upgrade the site. And in August of last year, we unveiled one of the most technologically advanced recycling facilities in the country right here in Columbus.
So what the big upgrade, it was up and running in August already.
Yes.
So you've gotten all the kinks out of it, presumably.
We went through about a 90-day period to continue through the transition, and we learned new things about the system almost every day. And the capabilities are mind-boggling compared to the other systems that we've had in the past.
The first phase involved the pre-processing and removal of cardboard. Why is that such a big deal?
Cardboard is a big item in the mix.
You want that?
Absolutely. Okay. We want cardboard for recycling. And in a residential program, we want to get it out right away, so we're left with the paper, bottles, and cans that we can manage more effectively in the mechanical sorting process. The initial phase, when we tip everything onto the floor, it's a pile of several hundred tons of recyclables, and we're trying to sort through those by categories.
Why don't you have the people separate them in the bins, separate them between paper and plastic and metal?
The key to any successful recycling program that we've seen in our experience is to make it as easy and convenient as possible. The more work you put on the consumer or the resident, the less likely they are to participate. And we use a program called single stream recycling, meaning everything can go into one container. We can send one collection truck down the street to pick it up, and we bring it back to one facility where it all gets sorted and processed.
Deanne, how does the Roemke Columbus material, well, MRF,
we call it a MRF.
MRF.
Yes.
How does the material recovery system, Deanne, how does it compare around the country? Is it really state of the art?
I would say that it compares favorably. It's on par with the systems that are currently being updated and implemented today. Most are single stream systems that rely very heavily on automated sorting. Where Roemke's is unique is that it's got the glass recovery system. They've really put an emphasis on that because, as Jonathan can tell you, Roemke also operates a glass beneficiation facility. So it's in their best interest to get as clean a material that they can going into that facility originally. So,
Harold in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Harold.
Oh, hi. I had heard that the city of Columbus, and I don't know who exactly, but was not going to collect from apartment complexes.
Right.
And that would seem to me to be, you know, the people that live there pay city taxes. The apartment complexes pay property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that would seem to be a high-density group of people that you could collect more from with less effort.
Well, let's find out. Thanks.
Comments off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Harold. That's a good question. Jonathan Kissel, what's the holdup? Is it you can never do it, or is it just not time yet?
You know, Harold brings up a really great question. We see a lot of support from apartment complexes for individuals looking to recycle. And what we encourage you to do is to first, please call the City of Columbus and find out for sure if your complex is or is not included in the program.
Some of them are?
Well, it's up to four units. Any building with four units or less will be included.
Okay.
Five or more units will not be eligible for this particular program. The next step would be, in talking to the city, find out for sure if your complex is part of it. And then next, if they're not, please contact Roemke. We may be able to find a solution to meet those individual apartment complexes' needs. We work with many apartment complexes throughout the area to provide recycling services to them. There are some unique challenges in complex
areas.
What
are they?
Collection space to place a container, the people moving in and out and making sure that the container, if there
if
are individual containers, they don't
dumping.
Go with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
So there are some unique challenges that we have to face in determining what's best for that specific complex.
Deanne Toto, recycling is a global industry now. What are the end products of recycling used for now? It's kind of hard to imagine, but a lot more than it used to be.
Well, likely the plastic bottles, the PET bottles that you're putting in your recycling bin are showing up in either plastic strapping, polyester fiber, carpet fiber, even the aseptic containers, which I know Roemke received a grant to install an optical sorter to recover those containers. Those are being used at tissue mills. So they're in your tissue products, everything from Kleenex to the paper towel that you use generally at, restroom facilities, away from home facilities, and the Curtin Council is working very closely with tissue mills. They want that material, and so they're working on partnerships to increase the recycling of septic containers. Your aluminum has traditionally had a high degree of reuse. It's a high-value commodity, so while it represents a small portion of the recyclable stream from residential programs, it is one of the higher-value commodities there. And, fiber is also very high-value, unfortunately. So we're seeing some trouble in terms of the newspaper production and, traditional consumers of recycled fiber. So.
Like such as what? What kind of trouble?
Oh. Well, there's fewer newspapers.
Okay, right. Okay.
They're not consuming as much recyclables. They're not generating as much material to go back into the recycling stream. And there's a lot of consolidation going on in that industry as well. So there's fewer consumers out there, fewer mills out there.
Jonathan Kissel, it's important that the single stream recycling, which means you don't have to separate it.
Correct.
That's the idea, is convenient, as you mentioned. But also, and Deanne mentioned this, the product coming out of the facility has to be pure, not contaminated, which is why we used to be asked to rinse out the bottles before we put them in the bin and that sort of thing. We don't necessarily have to do that anymore.
We encourage residents to empty a plastic bottle, make sure there's no liquid remaining in it, crush it and replace the cap back on it, place it in your cart, and you'll be good for recycling. If we see a bottle that's full of liquid, we typically have to reject that because we're not really sure exactly what is contained within that bottle.
I see.
And also, if it's emptied and crushed, that helps in the recycling process a lot as well.
And if you leave the cap on, that's good.
It actually helps.
I've heard that they toss when they have the caps on.
No, they do not get tossed. We've actually have been going through somewhat
caps,
of an evolution.
All this time.
For the longest time, we did say no caps. But now this system actually works a little bit better with them on, as long as they're, if you can, try to crush the bottle.
Which brings up a larger question of how do you educate people? Because there's so many myths out there. There's so many old rules that people are still embracing. How do you get through to people about what it is that you can take these days and how to prepare the materials?
Education is certainly a key component.
How, though?
There are many different ways. Rumpke offers a comprehensive education program, including tours of our recycling facility that are open to the public. All they have to do is call us up and we'll schedule something. One of the great things about working with the City of Columbus on this new program is they are dedicating a lot of resources to make sure that people are aware of the new program and how to use it appropriately. The biggest key component is to make sure that when residents look at their recycling cart, they know what to put it in, what's acceptable, and what is ultimately going to be recycled on the back end. We also give classroom presentations. We've been meeting with a lot of community groups. There's a lot of grassroots efforts to make sure that people are aware of what is and is not acceptable for recycling.
Deanne Toto, a lot of people often are surprised that Columbus didn't already have curbside recycling a long time ago. How does Columbus rank, nationally, do you think, in terms of that?
Well, in terms of Ohio cities, I would say that Cleveland is also struggling with curbside recycling. We've got it in some of the suburban communities, but there are areas of Cleveland proper that do not. So I'd say, we generally lag behind the rest of the United States.
The state of Ohio does.
Yes.
Okay.
In terms of curbside access to recycling.
We have a tweet from John. He says they should write the rules of the program on the side of the containers.
Columbus residents will be happy with this one. The rules will be right on the lid of the cart. There'll be a picture stamped. It'll be very clear what does and does not go into the collection cart for recycling.
What about the old thing about pizza boxes? Apparently pizza boxes are okay now?
Pizza boxes are acceptable as long as they are free of any food or grease. Sometimes I get asked, what about if the bottom has cheese on it and the top doesn't? We'll rip the top off, recycle that, and then you can trash the bottom portion. That's great cardboard. We want it for recycling.
But before, we were told no pizza boxes at all. What changed?
You know, over the years, the sorting systems have become more and more sophisticated and advanced. And as we're able to capture a large volume of cardboard, we can include that into the mix. So it's just as we continue to make advancements in recycling, we're able to enhance and expand the list of acceptable items.
In Lakewood, we still can't do pizza boxes.
I don't think we can in Worthington either. I don't know.
Yes, you can.
Kieran, okay. Worthington, we can do pizza boxes. Kieran, in Clintonville, you're on the air. Now, you're not going to get started in Clintonville with us until, I think, December or something, but...
Well, no, but we do have the recycling being collected at the dumpster locations around the area.
Okay.
But my question is, what plastics are going to be collected? Because I know that's something that changes over time. And from community and city to city, I have relatives in other cities, and they don't take the same numbers. So I'm wondering, what are they going to do with the plastic?
And that's where you see it with a little recycle symbol. There's usually a number associated with that, right?
Yeah. What we try to do is make it as easy and as simple as possible. First of all, stop looking at the numbers. What we accept at Rumpke is in the shape of a bottle. If it's a plastic bottle or a plastic jug, we accept it. If it's not a plastic bottle or not a plastic jug, we do not accept it. So things like laundry detergent bottles, milk jugs, single-serve water bottles, sport drink bottles, your shampoo bottles, contact solution bottles, all those things
Anything
are great.
With a neck.
Exactly. If the base is wider than the neck, it's good to go. If it doesn't have that neck on it, it's probably not considered a bottle, and we probably do not take it.
Okay. What about the when I try to squash a bottle, I can't get the lid back on.
You don't have to have the lid.
No, you don't have to have the lid back on. But in order for the lid to be recycled, it has to be back on the container. If we get a lid separate from the bottle, there is a good chance it will get either rejected or mixed in with something else, and it probably will not be recovered.
Okay. Well, good questions, Kieran. Thanks.
Thank you.
What about glass?
Glass, again, if it's in the shape of a bottle or a jar,
it does the same thing.
As long as it had, if food or drink originated in it, like a spaghetti jar, pickle jar, a beer bottle, we'll take that for recycling. Things like window glass, ceramics, those are not acceptable. The comprehensive list of what is and is not acceptable will not only be on the cart lid, but also if you visit a website, recyclecolumbus.org, you'll get all the details as well.
We'll have that on our website at WOSU.org. An email from Cynthia, she says, I currently pay Rumpke, so I am excited for this free program, but I am worried I will have too much stuff for every other week. Just do their best, right?
The carts will be 64 gallons, which is a larger container. It's three times the size of the traditional bins. What we encourage you to do is contact the City of Columbus and let them know if you need additional containers. They might be able to help out.
Jonathan Kissel of Rumpke Recycling, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Deanne Toto of the Recycling Today Media Group. Thank you, Deanne.
Thank you, Ann. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.